Welcome to episode 10 of Under the Holotable.
I sense a trap.
Next move?
Spring the trap.
A Holotable News Network Galaxy of Heroes podcast covering in-depth analysis, mods, tips, and the hottest topics from the Outer Rim. I am Voxen, and joining me on today's episode, we have a man who doesn't know how to spell Patrick, Partick AF. Hey, Partick, thanks so much for joining me today.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me and for being such a good shard mate over the last few years.
That's right. Yes. So Partick and I actually share the same arena shard, which is actually kind of a coincidence because even outside of that, I probably would have still just had you on in terms of your place in the community and, you know, that you have your own podcast and things like that. But I'm really excited to have you on. And there's no one I'd rather have on to speak about today's topic, Relic 8s. But before we jump into all the information, the minutia, the listeners are probably wondering where a certain co-host is.
Wait a minute. How did this happen? We're smarter than this.
Apparently not.
Well, today is Sarah's birthday, and as much as I'm a slave driver, I gave her the day off. Actually, we're recording at an unusual time today, and she actually isn't able to join us. We've been off and on scheduling this episode for the last 2 weeks, so we...
And that is entirely my fault, and happy birthday to your co-host.
Right. But we finally managed to squeeze it in today, a little bit of an unusual time. She wasn't able to join us, but we wish her well and hope she's having lots of fun. We will somehow persevere without her. So today it's just us boys on the stream. I mentioned just a minute ago, Partick, you have your own podcast, Holotable Talk, which also has 9 episodes, and we are at 9 episodes of Under the Holotable. So this is our 10th episode. So I'm considering this the 10th episode of Holotable Talk as well. So it's a real 2-for episode here.
Well, I'll take it because as folks who have listened to the show I do with Syracuse Jedis, we're really bad at recording with any sort of regularity. And in fact, I think I've not done an episode since like March. So any attribution to cover the absence of content, I'll take.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I've listened to all 9 of those episodes. I mean, as everyone knows, I'm free to play, but, and I mentioned it before, I think even just on our Discord server, you know, that those episodes are just fascinating to me because you are talking about usually like guild issues and, you know, different things that, you know, are experienced on the whale side of the game that I don't experience or have, you know, any perspective on. And so I've always found it really fascinating just kind of listening to the things that you guys have to go to and how you handle territory wars and, you know, some of the different minutia that you deal with that I think, you know, as one of the top tier guilds that a lot of other guilds may not, you know, I'm probably more in a mid-level guild, but we certainly don't deal with some of the things that you deal with. So Partick, just to go over some of your stats, just to establish some credibility here, you are in Ka Patrol, and I'll let you correct me everything. You've kind of added some more relevant notes. SWGOH had you ranked 36, but that's of course not correct. You are the number 2 guild in GP in the whole game there with Ka Patrol. And it looks like you also have the best TW record of any top guild since you took on the Ka name in 2019. And of course, I think they can listen to a little bit more information about your guild's background from Holotable Talk episodes. You went a whole year undefeated. So that's actually really incredible. Did you want to chime in and kind of add any?
Yeah, info? No, just about. I think it was from, I want to say March 2020 until maybe February of this past year.
Yeah.
We didn't lose, which was great.
And is that
our, I think what's worked for us so well is that, you know, the guild has always been extremely competitive and successful, but we always put sort of culture first when we recruit, and like it's important that people are enjoying themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to bring in folks who do not need to be micromanaged, and the officers don't have to micromanage. So you know, there's a lot of burnout in the game, and we've talked about that on our show, that especially like at the officer level, there's just so much in terms of additional responsibility that can really wear on you. And at least in this current meta, you know, a lot of guilds are like streaming battles and there's in territory war, for example, and maybe even some in territory battle. And like, we've just decided not to do those things. I mean, both because we have members who enjoy, you know, who just don't want to do it. And like, from the officer side, it's just so much more work. And so we've really tried to make sure that people enjoy themselves first and enjoy their community. And, you know, as long as we are bringing into the fold folks who are on a sort of upward trajectory, who are really engaged and have sort of demonstrated that they have a feel for the gameplay and the game, everything else kind of works itself out.
Yeah, that must help a lot. Yeah, especially when you're at that level. And then is it my understanding too that at that level you're basically just on a rotation of guilds that you face in TW?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you can even like map it and expect like what your next opponent will
be. That's right. Yeah, we I mean, I think the only time, and this is true not just for us but for like the Maw guilds, for Wolfpack, I mean, most of the top GP guilds, we have a rotation of opponents. I don't know why it is that way.
Right.
But you pretty much know who you're going to get. And I think, honestly, we've talked about this on our show. That's kind of, it's really an impediment. Like, I think it would be better if there was a more randomized matchmaking system and you just sort of were always ready for whoever you were going to get. You know, right. I think there is a bit of like an upward, downward dynamic, knowing what your matchups are going to be.
Yes.
You know, and that's true, like, again, like, not to brag, but like, we've done very well and sort of we get the best of from other guilds, and they might move players or do remods to like set certain teams or for certain counters or whatever. And you know, we do the same thing for some of our bigger war. I mean, we don't move people, but like we remod and stuff for certain wars. And I think that in itself creates a lot of additional work for both officers and members that I think everyone would probably be better off if we had a bit more randomized matchmaking.
Right.
At least within, obviously you want even matchups as you can within the sort of GP bands that you occupy. So it's a pretty small set of opponents you could get, but less predictability, I think, overall would probably be a good thing in the way matchups work.
Yeah, absolutely. Because when you know that it's that matchup, you know, you can prepare. And same on the opposite side, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Well. Yeah. And just the amount of preparation that I know your officers do in that regard. So it's kind of really smart of them to really figure out that they can, you know, cut a corner in just in terms of who they're recruiting as well, that, you know, they can mitigate their micromanaging. I also want to point out that you are at 9.7 GP, barring any big jumps in GP since I last looked.
No, just about it. Like, I think in 972-ish, I want to say. But yeah, right about there. Honestly, it's like things don't, you know, I'm not really, like, I still have purple characters.
Yeah, okay.
But I'm not, like, really gearing up or relicking anyone at this point, except for the new stuff,
right? The stuff that are requirements, I assume.
But like, you know, I have like a gear 9 Gamguard and like a gear 11 Tebow or whatever, and like that's never going to change.
Okay, yeah, you're not
probably.
I love to hear that. But that's funny. You don't have like one of those pet projects where like, oh, I had to relicate my cup just for funsies, you know, or whatever it might have been.
Well, certainly. I mean, I have. I mean, maybe I will. It's, right now, I don't. But I've I've been there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, for me, it's interesting that, you know, just in the slow progression of this game, I never even thought I'd really see like 7 million GP. And now I'm like knocking on the door of 7 million. And then I can only imagine what it's like for you knocking on the door of like 10 million GP, you know, just.
Yeah. Well, I've got a ways to go for that, but I think there are some folks who've crossed that threshold.
Crossed that already. Wow. Yeah. That's just incredible. Just, you know, you spend so long, or, you know, when you're struggling through the metas, when we're at like 5 and 6 million GP and things like that. And now just, you know, seeing how much the game has grown and how much room there is for GP. And I mean, geez, with getting over 10, it's funny that we're still getting over 10 and yet, you know, still ages away from being able to max light side TB, you know, just based on GP, you know,
right.
Size of definitely. GP. And then one of the things I want to point out was you have been on the Whale Chat with Cubs. I think that's actually one of Cubs' like best series that he does, and I thought it was really cool that you got to be a part of that.
Yeah, I have done that a few times. He stopped doing it for a while. Hopefully, yeah. He comes back.
Yeah, and he just did one actually, based on the latest quote ahead.
I have a scheduling conflict with, but hopefully soon I can.
Did he reach out to you for that episode, that latest episode you did, or?
So he's got like a group of folks who he can ping when he's going to record something. So I'm sort of at least as of the last time was on that list, and I just couldn't make it last time.
Yeah.
So
he did have like AP gains. He did try to get a good cross section, even of like free play and mid tier players. So it was a really good episode. I enjoyed that. And then, you know, one of the things that I track pretty closely, I just passed the threshold of a 6-point mod score, but I think pretty characteristic for players of your level. You have a mod score of 12.8, just to kind of give people a little bit of relation of how massive that score is and how many 20 speed mods you have. You just got your 200th 20 speed secondary mod, which is I love that at that level, you know, you're not just putting in the effort on your tunes and your relics, but you're putting in just as much effort on your modding and like getting up like just all of those secondaries to like fill out your arena teams and your not arena teams but your grand arena teams.
Well I mean that's really what makes all the difference. Especially like with the matchups that I and sort of folks in my GP bands have, like in grand arena, and then our PvP matchups like in territory war, you know, with the size of the board, especially in territory war, like every team on offense and defense, you're only using teams that everyone has pretty maxed out, both in terms of relics and zetas. And that's true even for, you know, members of our guild who might have like a million fewer GP than those of us in the top 10, let's say, in terms of roster size. Like all of that GP delta is all in the sort of unused portion of the roster for like most PvP game modes. And so mods make all the difference, you know, having, and it's just something I've like spent a lot of time and effort on over the sort of period of time I've been playing the game to you know. And I guess for me, you know, I played very sort of casually, like in like a collector way for years, like not really being competitive or in a guild. Like the guild I was in from when I started the game until when I eventually left couldn't finish the Sith raid, like even a year after the Sith raid came out, and that's when I eventually left and went to play a guild that was a bit more serious, because I didn't have like any Treya shards or anything like that. But you know, for me, like sort of my growth as a player, it was like the first thing I sort of discovered was when relics came out, I could put relics on like secondary teams and create an advantage by having like, you know, relic, whatever the non-meta team was, like in Grand Arena would be a big advantage if I had like a relic, like Enfys Nest or Zalbar, like something random that would create matchup problems versus just like what everyone else was doing. Right. And so I sort of had discovered that and was really leaning on that to have like PV, like matchups, like GAC and other success. And then mods was really the next piece of it. And, you know, that's really been a credit, especially to being in CP, because it's just a big emphasis like as a guild, and it's where a lot of us, you know, set ourselves apart. Like our guild is on average is like, I think like 120 plus 20 speed mods, which is, I mean, insane given where most rosters are at. And it's just it's something that you can't, there's no real shortcut to that other than spending time on it. And of course, like has 6-dot slicing accelerates that growth a lot now that those slices are more available. But
you get a whole nother 5 chances.
Absolutely. But you know, but it's taken a long time.
Yeah, it still does. And then, I was going to ask you, like, you know, a little bit more about like your mod farming. So is that mostly just you do it, you know, how do you then separate out, like, are you just doing the mod farming from the challenges, or are you mostly buying from stores? I assume you're obviously buying from the store and things like that.
So I almost never buy from the store.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
because the farming itself is so credit intensive.
Yes.
Really, the only time I buy from the store is using fleet currency. Okay. If I see like a gold mod that has +5 speed and otherwise like good primary and secondary.
Yeah. Yeah.
Otherwise, I like for regular credits, just the like the leveling up and slicing is so credit intensive on a daily basis that like the hit rate, you know, most of mod farming is just giving yourself more opportunities, right? Because it's all kind of a lottery about whether you hit. There's of course like different probabilities, but largely you just want to give yourself as many opportunities as you can get to roll speed and usually like speed and percent offense, probably the two most important things.
It's such a volume.
And so burning like whatever it is, 3.9 million or whatever on like a gold mod in the mod store is just, it's, you know, what you could use those credits for in terms of farming, in my view at least, is just a much better use of resources. So like my general approach is I do the 100s refreshes every day.
Okay.
And I all of my mod energy goes toward farming. Like my shortcut is I buy the slicing materials like in shipments.
Okay.
And
so are you buying like basically just everything that's available every week in shipments so you can keep up?
Yeah. Well, for them, especially, you know, I really, at this point now, like I really don't six dot something unless it's like a +20.
Otherwise, yeah, you're definitely like, at that spot now where you get to be more choosy, I assume.
So like I really don't like accumulate the six dot slicing materials because they're just so expensive, like especially the like where the one you need 20 of, I don't know what any of the names are, but it's just so intensive to buy, like I delay that unless I really need to six dot something. But the other materials, like going from like a gray to a gold, I will just try to hoard those and have I usually try to have like 200 or 250 of each on hand.
Wow.
And try to just like replenish them as needed.
Right.
But then I can spend all the mod energy on actual farming. And then like my general farming approach, which is not my approach, it's actually Vondi, who we interviewed on my pod, who's like really taught me most of what I know about the game.
Oh, cool.
You know, did all this math and like, you know, but my basic approach is leveling grays up to level 6, and if you hit a 4 or 5 speed at level 6, then you go to 15 and slice. If you get like a +3, I just sell that straight away because like the odds of going from a 3 up to a 20 are just not worth it. If you miss speed but get like percent offense or crit chance or like some rare, like CD triangle or like tenacity cross on a tenacity set or something else that's kind of rare, then maybe you run that again to 9. And then if you hit speed, that's great. If you don't, it's probably time to give up because like the credit cost going from like level 9 to level 12 is for grays just really adds up over time. So if you cross that threshold, you slice to green, I'm usually looking for like a +8 speed at green, otherwise I'll sell it. And then like a +10 at blue, otherwise I sell it. And then especially earlier in like my frenetic farming days, I would then roll purples at 12 or more. But really now, like I have probably 815 speed mods. Like I just don't need them. So really, unless I get a +15 purple or maybe a +14 purple,
if it's a good
primary, where I like all I really care about at this point is trying to get to 20s, ideally with percent offense. Because like if I mean, you know, just like if I roll something that's less than a 20, like that's the chances of that being used to improve a character that I'd actually use in territory war or whatever is just very small.
And so at least
that's like where, at least where I am. But
yeah,
I mean, I think it's very important not to over, like wasted slices, I think are really where people misuse their materials and efforts. Like you really want to make sure that you have something worth slicing because the odds of hitting on that slice every time are not really in your favor.
Yeah, I think I faced Wen from our arena shard in GA at one point, and we had a lengthy conversation about, actually it wasn't Wen, have to remember who it was, but we just had a lengthy conversation about Maz. He's like, yeah, it's just, it's an arms race for 20s. That's it. It's just nothing matters with 20s at this point. And so that's really interesting. And I just really appreciate you sharing all of that, because that's a really interesting just perspective on, you know, buying from the shops and things like that. Cause I still probably buy gold with 5-speed secondary quite a bit when I see them, just because it just seems like it's so hard to get that or to be able to achieve that from the farming in the challenge. But
I'm trying not to do that right now, though. I have to save my fleet currency for the executor.
Yes, that's definitely coming, which is actually what we're about to jump into, talk a little bit about the road ahead. But I just want to lastly mention, because you talked a little bit about, you know, relicking your, you know, sub-tunes or tunes on your sub-teams and how that much that helps you in, you know, GA. And so often with GA, you know your GL is going to be countered. You know, they're already planning on, you know, what you're going to put for a GL, or they've like developed how to beat that. But then when it comes to like, you know, taking out that sub team on the back wall, that's like a newt or a dooku or something, and all of a sudden they have to face like, yeah, like an R8 newt or a dooku, like that's where you win those matches at your level. So I can totally imagine, yeah, what you meant by coming up with that. Cause
yeah. And that was especially like, as I was growing in GP and learning more about the game. I mean, now everyone in my brackets already has everything. So it really is like, especially speed and offense modding and just having,
okay,
you know, turn orders dialed in on particular teams and like allocating your offensive teams and like setting up on the board where you place your defenses to like draw what you want the other person to use. Like, it's those kinds of things that really make the difference, because there really is not a relic disparity anymore. And like, I know, you know, there are these like horror stories I know from players at lower GPs and GA who get these matches where like they have different numbers of GLs than the other person, that kind of thing, which like, you know, we just don't deal with that. It's all like everyone's got everything, and it's a question of how you modded and how you place.
I often face opponents with one less GL, actually, so it's kind of a nice thing, but you still have to play it correctly. But, you know, watching Xerath and all of these top player GA players a lot often, you know, they set like really hard defenses, but it's not like the first 5 or 6 teams they face. They're relying on how are you going to beat the last team you face after you've used up everything, you know, resources, getting through like the front, your, you know, the first whatever it is now, like 12 teams that they placed
in. Yeah, like a lot of the holds you get are not the mega teams. It's what people have, or, you know, or if you set up your board in a way that makes people try to reach on like the front wall because they have to hedge for what you might have set in like the secret back zone.
Yeah.
And you can get fails that way by like baiting people into going too light on something that they might underestimate, and then losing when, if they knew what your whole defense was, they would have probably allocated a different team there.
Yeah, I absolutely lost my last match in GA because I was figuring there could be a GL on the back wall, and he had like full relic GOs, which I don't see too often. And usually I can get away with like one cheap or one counter that isn't going to get me max bounders, and so like I took in like a cheaper counter than I probably should have against those geos, but then that cost me the match. Like, if I had just gone for like the full 60 against those geos, it would have been easy because he cheesed the back wall and I whatever, but yeah, ended up like those geos cost me. So pretty interesting, but yeah, let's transition here a little bit and talk about the road ahead. Now they're probably going to cover the road ahead, of course, on HNN with Sarah and Sergi, but you know, they're going to cover the news. We get to talk about it a little bit. And I kind of want to ask you, I assume that you are already completely finished with the executor requirements.
Yes, I did Piet Relic 8 the other day.
That's what I was wondering, if you even had those 2R8s done yet.
Boba Fett, I did a while ago, actually.
Okay. Yeah.
Relic 8 Boba Fett is a beast.
Yeah,
he just gets so much additional damage, and like bounty hunters are such a useful team, especially on offense against a lot of different things. So like, that's one that I did a while back. Piet, I did specifically for the prereqs. I waited until I've sort of, you know, I have a lot of R8s, and now
yeah,
you know, nothing is super urgent unless it's for a requirement. So I try not to spend one unless I have to.
That's really telling too, that, you know, of all, you have so many R8s and yet Piat wasn't one of them. So even when this set of requirements, you got caught needing to
R8. Yeah, Piat's not one of them. I haven't done Padme either.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I will obviously before the new GL event drops.
But so even as of now, you haven't done Padme yet?
I have not. I mean, I'm holding it because I know that you know, CG loves to bait you to spend resources and then kind of rope-a-dope with some other thing. So like, I figured there's no urgency to do that until the event is imminent. And I was like, let's just see what the other requirements are, or probably that'll be next. You know, I did the one on Piet, and so I've got one to burn right now, and then like half of another one.
Yeah.
Another R8, but I'm going to wait on Padme at least until we get another set of requirements or see what else is going on.
I was pretty disappointed. The game for me is basically gets to dictate who I R8, and, you know, I was pretty disappointed with, you know, seeing who they put for the R8s for these. I mean, I have all the mats and the resources to do it, but the fact that you didn't have a Piat, you know, it's just unnecessary for Piat and what
Piat, like, you R8. Don't for the ground team, you don't need it, and that's especially true with what they're doing to troopers in the next month or so. I mean, it's just not necessary,
right?
Although it does wonders for a capital ship. Like most of us, especially
We're going to do it anyway.
Yeah, we probably set the tone on this. Like we all did GK first,
right?
Because of the way that it affected negotiator speeds and affected the fleet mirrors. And so I think for most capital ships, I mean, I've done GK now. And actually, I guess a GG I did recently, but not urgently.
Yeah.
But, you know,
his capital doesn't need it as much.
Yeah. But like, I haven't done like Thrawn or Holdo or Akbar or any of those other ones there. It doesn't matter as much. But like, Negotiator is the one where you do end up mirroring a lot.
Right.
And the speed difference does matter quite a bit.
Well, especially if this executor takes the level that we hope it to take, you know, I guess they're just getting out ahead. And that's actually a good perspective. Yeah. I didn't think about that. If this becomes meta, you're going to R8 it no matter what. So
I mean, I think we have to assume it's going to be a meta shift in fleet because we haven't had one in like 2 years.
Right. And they actually just came out with some more information on the executor today. So I actually took a gamble on the Razor Crest that it would be farmable before, so I didn't max out my currency getting it from Conquest, and they just basically released it today and said that the Razor Crest will have a Galactic Chase event starting tomorrow, and it will go for 5 days. And so, you know, even if you weren't buying credits, but you're just getting every max crate, I think I need like 66 or something shards left. So I should easily be able to fill it out in 7-star from the Galactic Chase. So that gamble actually like totally paid off. I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah, that's great.
And then it looks like it's going to be the same style event as we had with Holdo's ship and with the executor. What's
Finalizer?
A Finalizer. Thank you. Duh. But even with those ships, if I'm correct, you can't refresh unlimited for those, right? You only get a certain number of refreshes of those at a time. So I don't, I'm just wondering, I guess my question is whether or not you can max that on day one.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I think you can because I think there, if I remember right, there were three different ways to acquire shards. One is from buying the pack,
which
I think they have like a dollar value. It's like a dollar pack.
Yeah.
And then they have the event, which I think had like a, I don't know if it's $9.99 crystal refresh or whoever it was. And then I thought they also had like a 1250 crystal pack.
Oh, okay.
And so I think, I'm not sure, but my memory is that between those three, you could max on day one.
Okay. Yeah. So it'll be expensive. Yeah. Someone in my my guild was saying it's going to be like 25,000, around 25,000 crystals to 7-star at day one, just from refreshes from the event.
Yeah, maybe. So, I mean, that would honestly be that. I think that's cheaper than a marquee. So.
Oh, okay. That's actually a good point.
Marquees usually end up being like 3 vaults at the drop rates they've been doing.
Okay. Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Watching those is painful.
Yeah. I don't, the one thing I'm not sure about, though, and I may have just misread this, is they've said that you need the RAP in order to access the final tier of the event.
Which makes sense.
And so if that's true, there must be some upper limit on what you can obtain through packs.
Yeah.
In terms of shards, because if you, like, theoretically you could not complete the playable event and then just like pull the 1250 credit packs until you maxed it. And it sounds like they're saying that will not be an option.
Okay.
So I don't know exactly how that's going to work, but
yeah, another great perspective. I wouldn't have thought of that, but yeah, and those requirements. So yeah, I'm pretty excited for that Galactic Chase starting, because I really do want to get that 7-star Razor Crest. I still have a Gear 12 BAM, but mostly just because I haven't, I'm not using that ship or tune, enough that it's made me want to push him up to relics yet.
He's great.
He's great, right? Absolutely, yeah. I still don't have his supporting cast essentially as well.
Okay, well, yeah. If you don't have IG-11, it's
Because for me, so much, it's like when an X, and just like you were saying about moving the goal, CG moves the goalposts. It's like, I went all out, might side heavy. So getting JMK was actually pretty easy for me, but and so then as soon as I got him, it's like, okay, I have to like hoard back up so that I'm somewhat prepared for Lord Vader, except, because between like, I had like maybe 1,000 Cairo stocked up, but between like JMK and Cap coming out and I think I took one other tune up. Dark Trooper. I finally got Dark Trooper 7-star and I took him up to R7 so I can have him. And between that, it was like back down to 0, like Cairo.
Right.
So I was like, okay, I got to like hoard everything now for like hopefully getting to Lord Vader. And then it was so deflating seeing like Executor come out and just being like, oh, I'm so screwed, because now like I'm going to need the Executor, because the thought will be meta, and the ship arena is such an easy / like viable way for crystal income, like I can't lose that, and then like then I'm going to push that direction, now it's going to set me even farther back from Lord Vader. My expectation with Lord Vader is that every GL, I feel like they, well, I mean, I think it kind of goes back and forth, but, like one GL might be sort of accessible, like Palpatine was, and then the other GL will be like harder to access, like JML was. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of am expecting with Lord Vader to be harder to access and be a slight power creep. I think he's just going to be slightly harder to counter for, just his progression of everything where we're at.
Yeah. I mean, I think like JMK certainly reflected to some degree a power bump.
Yeah.
Over the previous GLs. And I think like the Vader will be similar at least.
Yeah.
I started hoarding energy as soon as I finished the JMK requirements, because I sort of had a hunch that the other GL would not be that far off in the distance.
Right. Well, and then we also have Robot Legs Maul coming, and right, so it's like we got it, we'll probably have him before the GL or something. And or maybe we'll have him after, I guess. At least I guess if I'm behind on getting Lord Vader, I'll at least probably have Robot Legs Maul ready to go or something. But I can dump those resources. But as I was saying on our last episode, the Bad Batch for someone like me is such a slow farm. I mean, I just got like I just got my record to 5-stars. That's just such a slow farm. It's I get to focus on things that are closer, just knowing that it's going to take me a while to even catch up on that. So that'll be really interesting. And then I want to talk to you a little bit about the Lord Vader requirements as well. Are you all caught up on those that have been released so far? I assume you already had an R8 gas.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Okay, great. I assume you had to relic your Tusken
No, actually, it was already there. And this is where we were talking earlier about having pet projects. This is one that was a total crash and burn. But like, this was maybe a year ago.
Yeah.
I was looking at like stats tables on .gg and noticed that Tusken Raider has like one of the highest base physical damage values in the game.
Okay.
It's like, at that point, it was like Tusken Raider and like Candorous Ordo. And like SLKR and like Magma Trooper, maybe. I mean, it's like it's a kind of a random list.
Yeah, Biston's in there like, somewhere too. All right,
well, maybe you know, maybe that you could do something with that when you add like good offense modding and a bunch of relics. And so I bumped him up.
Yeah.
And I tried it. I think it, for a while, I tried a bunch of different ways in GA. I got a hold once, setting the three Tuskens under SLKR.
Oh wow.
Because of like, you know, SLK will give them like advantage, and then he has all this like offense mastery stacking. And so like the theory of a Tusken Raider could like one shot pretty much anyone if he got like his special move off because of how high his like base physical damage was and then how it stacked.
Yeah.
But you know, I think that held like once, but largely it was a flame out. So
I love that.
I'm so happy that I need that for something now. Cause
it's had to come full circle.
A wasted relic for sure. So I guess that does sort of dovetail into a point about relic 8 allocation, which is I think so much of deciding what is worth the relic 8 materials, which are so scarce and expensive, is a lot based on usage and their own kits, but it's also a lot based on how they interact with the GLs. You know, because jumping from R7 to R8 is a big boost in like mastery.
Yeah.
And a lot of the GLs, like allies who are used with GLs, usually get like mastery stacking bonuses in battle. So like the relic A application of GL allies like really magnifies that benefit. Right. So like you could have characters that may not merit that additional relic standing alone, but I'll take like Red Trooper is a good example of this. But like his like stacking bonuses under SLKR lead, all that mastery stacking of both like his health and his damage make a relic 8 there really interesting.
Wow.
You know, so there are a lot of the, I think, decision about whether to spend those materials is based on a combination of the kit of the particular character that's being reliced and its interaction with other allies and like the most frequently used team compositions.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Yeah, just with all of those support casts and things. And yeah, that's actually a really good dovetail into it. I guess I just have one last question before we transition. Are your all your Bad Batch reliced? I assume you pick them up. Yeah, because it's such a great team.
I have them all seven.
Yeah, and then do you guys keep them for, because I assume your whole guild has that, does your guild keep them for offense or defense in TW? I guess I don't know if you can divulge that secret.
Well, not everyone has them. You know, we have people in our guild who don't, who are free to play and have been for a long time and who are very light investors. Yeah. And we always make clear when there's a big new paywall announced that we will never ask people to like go outside their comfort zone, that people do what makes sense for them. And we, you know, we have the depth to make strategic adjustments. So like we want to use what we have. We don't want people to feel pressure to get something if they're not ready for it or if it, you know, whatever. So now everyone is all set up with that for sure. I think we, you know, the usage of there's so much interplay between like whatever the current meta is and how that interacts with what the sort of prevailing counters are. I think it's hard to say like one war to the next what the right setup will be. And I think a good example of this is like the history of people using SLKR, where, you know, I think for the most part, the full First Order has always been the strongest setup just because of the different buffs that come from that like unifaction. But like which characters in that lineup, that has really shifted over time. And like there was a period where I even at the beginning, like people were using Captain Phasma a lot because of her like advantage in turn meter boosting. And then there was sort of a shift to like a double tank with like KRU and First Order Stormtrooper. And then there's a sort of dalliance with like First Order Officer. In a lot of ways, it, you know, a lot of guilds are coming back full circle to Phasma. And so it's like, it's kind of interesting how, you know, the cadence of it is like a team comes out and there's sort of a meta defined and then counters develop, and that causes a shift in the team that then like sort of breeds new counter development, and it's like a constant cat and mouse game that sometimes you come full circle or going like a totally unexpected direction. And you know, for us, like those things are shifting all the time, and that's the product of a lot of thought and testing and discussion. You know, the sort of metas don't shift by themselves. Like metas shift because people test and work and figure out improvements that eventually filter down.
Yeah, I think with the Bad Batch in particular, it's just so interesting because, you know, EA said that they were like designed, or CG said they're designed to be like a defensive team, but like all the testing is like, what can they do on offense? And then the testing is actually really impressive on what they can do on offense. So, yeah, you know, I just kind of wonder where in practical use they're actually going to land. And, you know, for me, I'm nowhere close to seeing it or, you know, being asked to set it or anything. So I just kind of wasn't sure. Like,
yeah, well, I guess, like I could say
plenty, you know, of them. Yeah, like how are you guys using them?
Yeah, like I could say for me personally in Grand Arena, for example, in this past season of GA 5v5, I used Bad Batch against Grievous teams a lot.
Oh, so you saved them for offense.
I may have set them a bit, but usually I held them because they're like a sort of flex team where like you can use them to do a lot against GG.
And full banners.
Right, for full banners. I use them against, like, a lot of people were setting, like, really high relic Ewok teams.
Yeah.
And, like, as long as your Bad Batch Echo gets out first and sort of dazes everyone, like, that's kind of a fun
shuts team
to use there. Because, like, Bad Batch Echo has really high base speed.
Incredibly high, yeah.
So, as long, I think, when I was, my last GA group, I think I was running him, like, close to 350.
Right.
And so, if you get out first, you can really, like, put a stop to a lot of other teams that rely on like turn meter gains or starting a train. And so they have a lot of like flexibility, plus they have a lot of healing mechanics. And so it's a good like banger team on offense.
Yeah. And a lot of times when you're using that counter on offense, you don't need the fifth, you know? So again, you're just getting that extra banner, you know, on top of, you know, the team. You can rely on the team, like ending with max protection and health and everything. So again, just fascinating. Yeah. Fascinating stuff. But yeah, with that, let's transition into our featured topic for today with Master Codebreaker. So today we're going to talk about R8. So, you know, we're going to just start by going over a lot of the basics. Now, this information has been covered, you know, across the community in one way or another, but we're going to aggregate it a little bit here and just kind of discuss some of the bigger swipes or the bigger top themes of R8. And, you know, maybe there'll be some new information for people, or some people, you know, will uncover some things that people hadn't realized. And so just to kind of start with the arrow magnifiers, you need 20 and you can only get them from the pit raid. So pretty straightforward. Nothing new really there. And then of course we know from the breakdown of the pit raid, first gives you 11, two through second through fifth gives you 10, six through eight gives you 8, 11 through 25 gives you 5, so you have a 6 magnifier discrepancy between first and 25th. And then from 26 to 40, you get 3, and 41 to 50, you get 1. Now, I think if you are in a GP that's more in a mid-range, in a guild that is, you know, completing this raid, the real stretch goal for you, if you're not taking that top 10, is making sure you're getting in that 11 to 25, because then at least, you know, if your guild is running the pit raid once a week, which they should be, then you're at least going to be able to take an R8 after a month, you know, which is somewhat of a good progression if you're at that mid tier of GP. Now, what I really wanted to ask you, Partick, was, you know, as someone who has a ton of R8, so for me, like, I don't R8 as much. So the, you know, and I'm always taking basically top 5 or top 10 at worst in the challenge pit. So this is kind of a non-issue for me. I'm never hitting a ceiling with these. I just always have more of these than I ever know what to do with. But for someone like you who's pushed the envelope on number of R8s, how does the, you know, how do you hit the wall or deal with that limitation on those from the challenge raid?
So the way my goal usually is just to be top 5 in every raid.
Yeah.
You know, we do our home raids, whatever, with whatever frequency those occur from getting tickets. And then at least us as a guild, we usually offer a couple of, merking opportunities where a small group of us will go to another guild that has farm tickets and then do the raid with that guild so that the members there who may not be able to finish the raid on their own can collect some rewards. But then it also helps us give members additional opportunities for top finishes. Mm-hmm. So we try to have it set up where most people, we can clear a raid with only 9 or 10 people.
Yeah.
So we really only need that, and we try to give people opportunities to split up so that more people can get more rewards.
Yeah.
There are other guilds who have like instituted a formal rotation for who finishes where to ensure the equitable distribution of materials. And we very specifically do not do that.
Mm.
Like, part of our culture is like friendly competition. And if people are better at the raid, they should have more materials, and people who struggle and have an incentive to try to get better. And, you know, practicing in those other game modes keeps you sharp for territory wars and other PvP and, you know, TB and other events. So like, we don't do it that way, but we do try to create as many opportunities as possible for people to raid in smaller groups to give the guild as a whole more R8 materials than if everyone just did the home raid every week. You had people finishing like 45th and getting one R8 mat.
Right. That would not be feasible really at your level. So that's interesting to kind of hear how you solved that a little bit. But then, have you hit a limitation? Do you find you ever hit a limitation on the arrow magnifiers or the salvage that you're getting from the raids?
So typically when I have an R8 ready to apply, I've sometimes had like a gap in, I guess, whatever is the one that you've done, the impulse detectors, I guess, is what you, the other one, the one that doesn't come from the raid.
Right.
Those are the drop rate for like the salvage materials for those is, yes, very low.
Wow.
You know, okay. But before I started hoarding energy for the GLs, I was doing all of my sims for tickets on like Lightside 9F.
Okay.
Because that gave you like salvage materials for the arrow magnifiers, or not the arrow magnifiers, sorry, the
impulse detector.
I don't know any of these terms.
It's okay. A couple of things right here.
So I'm not doing that anymore because I'm trying to not spend any. I do 6 sims on like 1A to only spend 64 energy.
Mm-hmm.
To do like my dailies, and then I have been getting tickets with Cantina energy.
Yeah, right, because you're stocking energy now.
Like, you know, it cost, it was like I spent I think 23,000 energy roughly to get JMK to alt on the first day.
Yeah,
and I want to have the amount to do Vader the same right away. I mean, I don't know if I'm at like 16,000 right now. I don't know if I'll get there or not.
Yeah,
but that's my goal, and so I've been now, the impulse detectors are in the weekly shipments.
Yes,
I've been grabbing those because the drop rates and the cost of energy is too great.
Well, that's interesting to hear about the drop rate on the salvage, because I didn't realize that. I mean, I haven't farmed it myself, but it doesn't surprise me that on those three pieces or whatever the the best equitable node is, that you notice a terrible drop rate on it.
And I mean, because it's the same salvage. I mean, this is the other thing. It's the same salvage you need for,
yes,
like whatever the most annoying relic material is, like the one that you have to do starting at like R5. That's, yes, kind of like the Danish looking thing.
Yep.
It's the gear 12 salvage pieces.
Okay. Yes, absolutely. So if I can just jump in here real quick. Yeah. So the three for the impulse detectors, you need 20, and the salvage used for them is the left, basically some of the most used left side gear pieces, which is the multi-tool, which is used 130 times by characters, the bayonet, which is used 81 times by characters, and the med pack used 113 times by characters. So, you know, if you're the casual person and you happen to be like reviewing what salvage you have to use at any given time to R8 a character, I would tend to say lean towards the bayonet, because it is used slightly less just in terms of maybe stock that you have. So that's just kind of interesting to know. But yeah, I mean, they really knew what they were doing, but, you know, put the players back into a corner, you know, with those being only giving you three options, and then those three options also being the most popular pieces for getting through that, you know, left side of gear 12.
Yeah, definitely. And so at least for me, I think for most others I've talked to, if you're farming that, we typically have done that on light side 9F, because that also gives you some other like relic salvage materials.
Yeah. And then I will mention that, you know, maybe here's a good place to just kind of mention that, you know, woefully missing from any relic crafting is the MK12 Armatech tactical data, which is basically like the kind of circuit looking one, which I'm sure anyone in the game has. Like, I think I have at least 10 or 11 of them now, like fully crafted pieces, because no one needs them. And CG did come out and address this issue and basically said it was due to coding that we're not able to add that, but you know, that just doesn't really track. And it just seems like, yeah, oh, what a surprise that all of a sudden it's such a coding issue to like use the least, to add the least used piece of gear, like as a, like, you know, something they can use for relic salvage. So I just thought that was really interesting, right, thing there, because yeah, every time I get those from the Sith raid, I'm just like, god damn it, I got another one of these things. Like, and it's always a full piece too, where you're normally like so excited, oh, I got a full piece of something. So, and then you also mentioned acquiring impulse detectors from the weekly shipments. So I want to address that really quick. So those are 900 crystals for 5 or 1800 crystals for 10. Now, this is an amazing deal. And just as Partick was saying, you really should pick up these every single time they are in weekly shipments if you're serious about R8ing as many characters as possible. Now, just to kind of give you a little quick breakdown between, you know, the cost of these in the weekly shipments and, you know, the cost of these if you were to just make these based on the salvage. So now you can't buy full pieces of these salvage. Like, you can't buy a full multi-tool, a full bayonet, or a full med pack. You are really relegated to putting together the salvage for those pieces. And now the salvage cost is 900 crystals for 30 of them. So, so third, and that breaks down to basically like 30 crystals per individual piece of salvage for the multi-tool, the bayonet, or the med pack. So all of that really to say that the cost in crystals for an impulse detector is 5,520 crystals, which is huge. I mean, 5,000 crystals. I mean, that's basically as much as one of the right side pieces if you were to buy a full piece. And so when you evaluate and cross-reference the fact that buying the salvage for crystals to form an impulse detector is 5,000, and then you can get 10, and that's for 20, so it'd be whatever that is, 2,000. I'm not going to do the math live right now, but you would basically have, you know, you compare that to only needing 1,800 crystals for 10 from weekly shipments. I mean, it's a steal. It's just a no-brainer to be able to pick those up from weekly shipments. Now, I personally don't.
And that's, I should say really quick, that's with the important caveat that like any resources did deal in air quotes, because like it's within the context of the in-game economy, because like any money or resources invested in a mobile game is wasted pretty much, unless you think about it as paying for entertainment. But if you accept the rules of the in-game microtransaction economy, within those rules, it is a less worse option than farming, I guess, is the point, right?
Yeah.
No, there is no good deal, just like the game has no real reward. But it's within the fantasy economy.
I think that might
be more attractive acquisition costs than the alternatives.
Yeah. I think no real reward might have to be the title of this episode. That was great. But yeah, and so I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, I was blown away when I, you know, did the calculation. I saw the calculation on those impulse detectors for the salvage and things, and then just especially knowing the drop rate is bad, and just yeah, how frustrating that must be when you're really trying to push it on those. And so yeah, just as I was saying, like I am not at a point where I'm pushing as many R8s, so I generally, as of now, I mean, I'm betting these next four R8s that I'm going to have to do as requirements for the Executor and Lord Vader will probably kill whatever salvage I have. But I think one of the things that I actually, and a change I made immediately after seeing, you know, this breakdown of this economy was, now every time I see the multi-tool bayonet or medpack salvage in the shard shipments, I buy it. I just now know that I can never have enough of those three pieces of gear, like, because there I'm going to need them for filling out characters, and I'm going to need them for relicking, and just I need to be hoarding those three things as much as possible at all times. And they show up actually pretty regularly in the shard shipments, and so I've personally just found that that's a great place for my economy to being able to pick them up on a regular basis. Have you had any, I mean, it's got to be so hard for you right now, because yeah, you are hoarding energy, so you're not really, you know, farming them there. And I guess you said you're picking them up from weekly shipments. I mean, it's funny when it becomes like the crystal is the more expendable resource than the energy.
Yeah, which, as insane as that sounds, right? I mean, yeah. And you know, for me, I just have such a stockpile of the other currency in like the various shipments, like this, like the guild event currency, like get one, get two, shard shop currency, like squad arena store, all that. Like I just have like hundreds of thousands of all of that. And so what I've been trying to do with like the guild currency especially is basically any gear, no matter what it is, that I don't already have like at least like 300 of, like I just buy.
Okay. Because
I've got like 200,000 guild currency just sitting there.
Oh.
And you know, the shard shop currency, I think I've got like 130k or something of that. And so nice. Like yeah, any sort of gear 12 pieces, especially the left side salvage, you know, I've just been buying those too with the shard currency.
Okay.
I've been trying not to spend any get. I did burn a bunch of get one on gear 12 stuff when I geared up Bad Batch.
Okay.
But I don't think I've spent any get two since I seven starred Malevolence, which was the second get two capital ship I did.
Wow.
I don't think I've touched it since then, but I have spent some get one, but I think I still have more than like 100,000 get one.
Well, I think that's a really good point that you bring up, which I'm actually going to do on a future episode to tease it, which I'm going to do an episode basically on just all the shops. And, you know, I want to do a kind of cross-reference of how different players approach the shops, because I think we all approach it differently. But I think one of the most important things with any dealing with any of the shops is, you know, maintaining a threshold of that currency, you know, for, you know, any situation that might come up. Because I mean, if there ever comes a change where CG decides, you know, another situation like you had with gas, you know, you need that stockpile, you know.
Right, absolutely right. I that's exactly right. Like I don't want to be caught in some panic farm situation.
Right. And I think it's, you know, good to, I mean, you know, and then once whatever that threshold is for you, once you build it up, then you can spend, you know, and then it's easy to spend. And so, but I think it's really important to, you know, just develop a little bit of a buffer, which actually happens pretty quickly. And then you just go back to your, whatever would be your normal game economy with you spending. And so for me, yeah, like I have my thresholds, which I've built up over time. And so now I have them. And so you know, for me, you know, Cairo is the bane of my free-to-play existence. So that's basically what I spend most of my get to on, is I don't buy the set of 15 of the boxy piece of Cairo, but the prong one that just comes in five. That's, I just buy that basically every time it's in the shop, because I can just never get those fast enough. Because of course, you know, that piece is used more than the boxy one. So real quick, just to kind of touch on the conquest side of impulse detectors, to kind of address some of the economy that happens now that conquest has been introduced, and in terms of the advantages that those give you in getting impulse detectors. So now, the scrap used to make impulse detectors is 12 conquest credits apiece, or 5 for 60. So you need 91 pieces of scrap to make 10 impulse detectors. If there was enough available, you could buy enough scrap for 10 using 1,092 credits. Now, you know, we have come into this brand new era of conquest where, you know, the conquest currency is at a premium, because now we know that there are characters coming that are going to use up our currency, and we need to make sure that we have that. And of course, they have softened that, because now no longer will you need to use credits to change discs and things. But basically, that now being at a premium, you really have to question, what is the best use of my conquest credits, especially when it comes to spending them on splurging them something on the impulse detectors, when you not only have like a cat, but you also have the Razor Crest and Robot Legs Mall on the way. Now, just to quickly wrap this up, now to buy 10 impulse detectors directly, it costs 2,070 conquest credits. So basically, if you buy the scrap, which is 1,092 for 10, you are going to save 978 conquest credits. So the net of this is, do not buy directly the impulse detectors. If you are into spending your currency in conquest for impulse detectors, buy the salvage. Like, find that Jawa that has the salvage in it. I think it's actually the first Jawa you encounter in Sector 1. And just buy those, buy the scrap for that, and you can put that most efficiently towards your impulse detectors. And then that actually also goes for the Zimbiddle pieces. There are Zimbiddle pieces in Conquest, and just the footnote to this would be also, do not buy the direct pieces. Buy the scrap, inform them. It's more cost effective. Have you bought any of the pieces or put any of your resources towards impulse detectors from Conquest?
I don't think so. I have generally tried only to use Conquest currency on the character and ship shards.
Okay.
So, like, I think I only use them for Cat and Razor Crest, only to the extent needed to seven-star them both after the last Conquest, which I did.
Yeah, and so I wasn't really sure. I mean, you know, when they first announced Cat coming and being for currency, and people were calculating all the numbers and saying, like, you know, initially, like, oh, you know, you needed to have, oh, whatever it was, like 250 currency before, you know, the first Cat conquest started in order to finish it. It's just like, oh, they're going to be running a deficit, you know, to catch people off guard. And so it's just like, okay, well, I see the writing on the wall here. Like, I need to make sure now this is something that I'm hoarding so that I never get caught off guard. I get behind on a character unlock, especially seeing, like, you know, I think a lot of people are like, oh, I have to take one more month for Cat. But, you know, I love that I have Cat right now. She's like one of the thrownest characters there is. And, you know, I would be really amiss personally, you know, if I didn't have her already, especially having JMK, and just getting to see that interaction has just been so much fun. And it's just the same for Maul. I'm going to really enjoy that. So, you know, I, to the extent that I forwent getting the Razor Crest, you know, I as soon as they announced that announcement for Cat and needing it for that unlock, I stopped buying all Razor Crest shards. So, but now that it seems like they've kind of acknowledged the player base and the importance of that currency, I feel like I could soften it a little bit. Like, I think I probably, if Razor Crest wasn't going to be a Galactic Chase, I think this next one I probably would have bought some Razor Crest shards, just because I know now that it's not going to be running a deficit for characters, is essentially what they've been saying. So I still want to have a stock, but, you know, I could, I feel like I could still afford whatever to go through a conquest of buying the Razor Crest shards. And then, boy, yeah. So where to go for here? So that's basically the breakdown on the pieces for our eight mats. Unless you have anything else to add, as someone with your experience, you know, having to pull these, you know, like, what are the footnotes that you have, or advice that might, that you have in your experience with, you know, farming for R8?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really, like, all of that math you just did, like, I'm totally incapable of recreating, so you do not want me to comment on any of that
stuff. Okay, but I mean, but that's the thing, it's like, I can...
I've just tried to...
None of it matters.
...do well in the raids.
Your experience.
Create opportunities for the our guild members to acquire RE materials as fast as they can through the raids. And then, you know, I think most people... In our group, and I think most in our sort of peer guilds, have largely only used the conquest currency for the characters.
Yeah.
And then there are, of course, you know, the RE packs that come out every once in a while.
Of course. Yeah, I guess that's the missing piece from my analysis as well.
Yeah.
The purchased packs. Now, have you purchased every pack that's come out
for RE? That has the RE materials?
Yeah.
Yes.
So I think they've done it twice now, where you can... And then
two,
you can,
it's a couple, I think maybe three times.
Three times, okay. Okay. Yeah, I can't remember if they had a third. Yeah, okay.
And then they're like three, you can do three pulls each time.
Three pulls, okay. And it takes two to get a full piece, but I think you can pull it three times then.
Yeah, although now they're doing, the packs are in this like lottery setup, where I think originally it was like a defined drop, and now it's variable.
Oh God!
How many pieces you get? So I think it's like 5 to 20. I want to say is the spread.
Man. No,
wow. And I think this last time it was 5 to 20 with a purchase limit of 2. I want to say.
Of course they did. Oh my God!
I think previously they did them that were like 10 mats at a time.
Yeah,
you could buy 3 times. I want to say.
Yeah, right, right. That sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, don't quote me on that. That's just
no. Or it was like, yeah. Well, what I recall was that it was like, I know that it took 2 packs because it was like $100, because I think the pack was $50 originally.
And yeah, that's right.
Two of them, you know, if you purchased it twice, you could get the R8. Yeah. So, which, you know, everyone was doing, I think, for that first pack, because you were really...
It's the scarcest resource in the game.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of people were struggling with the Rancor, the challenge pit at that time. And, you know, R8ing your SLK, you know, got you, you know, one fewer SLK you needed to get through whatever P2, right, or
definitely
something
helps, which,
you know, got you closer to the end. So there, so, you know, we saw a lot of that at that time. It's kind of interesting. And then, do you, I don't know if you have access to look here real quick. How many arrow magnifiers, the ones from the challenge pit, do you have right now? Do you know? I'll let you look at that. And then
I'll tell you, I think the answer is
30. Okay. Yeah.
So I'll tell you though. It's I am sitting on right now 33 aero magnifiers and 29 impulse detectors.
Okay. So for me, just as a...
But then I also have a double dip. This is my double dip week for the challenge pit. So I get 2 raids this week.
Yeah. So for me, for the aero magnifiers, I have 268.
Yeah, so that's a lot. I'll trade with you.
Yeah, right, of course. And then, you know, right now, 0 impulse detectors, but I have all the salvage, so kind of interesting. So now, you know, what everyone has, you know, basically covered ad nauseum, which is, you know, what are the best characters to R8? Now, most people do a top 10 list or a top 5 list or whatever, but Partick, you have 28 R8s. So we are going to do the top 28.
I think it's 29 now.
Well, that's right. Yeah. You just did Piet, right? So we are doing the top 29 tunes to R8. No, that's actually a complete joke. We're not going to go through 28 different tunes.
I'm happy to tell you what they are.
Okay. Well, I'm sure You know, we only have so much time, Partick. But to just kind of jump down some of the top ones to R8, and, you know, just to kind of address this a little bit. Now, I think there are, if you're just talking about the merits of R8, that is different now than what I think are actually the top tunes to R8. Because basically, the game has said, you have to R8 these tunes. So that is General Kenobi, Grandmaster Yoda, Admiral Piet, Boba Fett, Padme, and Gas. So far, those are the six R8s that you have to do in the game as a requirement for something that is end game. So I think it's just kind of interesting now that no matter what tunes merit your R8s, I think, you know, if you are an end game player or you are looking at that, I mean, which we both are in that boat, that, you know, basically those are going to be my only six R8s as of now. You know, I mean, I can't really at this point even, you know, afford to spend any other R8s because I don't want to be put behind when the next two required R8 are. And I thought it was really interesting. I was watching another video that was someone was saying, you know, now that they are setting this precedent of requiring the R8s as requirements, that, you know, I don't even really have, let alone whether I wanted to like relic a tune like Dark Trooper or something. I don't even have the leniency to like R8 my GLs personally. You know, which is, you know, the first thing, the no-brainer is R8 your GLs. And just to really quickly mention, which again, everyone should know, but the GLs are set apart from any other tunes in terms of getting R8 because of their Galactic Legend unique, which grants them 10% max health and protection per relic level. So you just, from GLs, you get that extra boost. And I didn't really actually calculate it specifically, but I believe the breakdown is like R8 is something like the equivalent of like three relic levels previous. Like, you know, R8 is equivalent of like R5 to R7. It's not linear. Yeah, no, right. No, it's not. But it's somewhere in that ballpark, I think, about three or four relic levels between seven is like the single R8. And then, you know, we'll get to, you know, kind of conjecture of like what R9 will be. But, you know, I think it's just so interesting too, because, you know, even when you were talking about, okay, what tunes are the best to relic 8 outside of GLs and like outside of requirements? Like you want to like, you know, get the best bang for your buck of like R8ing a tune. And a lot of that fell on what tunes are you using to counter GLs? Because you want a tune that's going to give you, because it's funny, they're like nerfing these GL counters like they were the end all be all, but a lot of those weren't super consistent. And so a lot of times you are R8ing those tunes to hopefully raise your chances to being more consistent at, you know, beating the GLs with your non-meta counters. And I almost, you know, I mean, I guess it makes sense that they would be refunding those R8 mats, you know, but I just think it's so interesting now that, you know, the players that did, you know, allocate those resources for those consistent counters, you know, now are set back, you know, and I'm sure that I might relic them again to some extent. I think it'll be really interesting, I guess, all in all, to say it'll be interesting to see what characters get R8ed as new GL counters, because I 100%, you know, there are going to be counters that will still work or new counters will be discovered and put together, even in spite of these nerfs, and, you know, to see what tunes might still get those R8. So, I mean, for you, you're going to get just a giant chunk of stuff back when they refund, you know, relic material, when they roll back whatever the 5 to 10 characters back to R5 is going to be.
Yeah, I think like Gas, Vader, Dark Trooper.
Yeah.
And Gas, you have to put right back on.
And Gas, you have to put right. Yeah, I haven't done the Gas one yet, which I would, but I just don't see the point.
I forget offhand what the other ones are that they're giving back. But yeah, there'll be a couple coming back. I don't know. I haven't thought too much about the reapplication of them.
Yeah.
I could see, for example, I could see Vader and Dark Trooper like not needing the reapplication anymore for the way they may be used. But it's, I mean, it's impossible to say until the changes come and we get to test it. I think in general, again, like in terms of, I'm not sure. I don't think there is like a one true list the best characters other than the prerequisites. It really depends on how you're using them, and that even itself may change over time. But I think you really have to think about, you know, most common usage, whether there's like a ship's benefit, you know, whether they're useful and like whether you need the boost for like a GL counter, or if you want the mastery boost from being a GL ally, for example. You know, a lot of those things, and also just like what role the character plays in a team, and like whether the boost for that relic makes a difference for the entire team versus just that one character. I think one example of that is Fives.
Like
going to an R8 on Fives
creates
a bunch of additional armor and protection.
And
I mean, obviously also because Fives has like the stat share on sacrifice, but also just in making Fives harder to kill first, that is a benefit that flows in any team with 501st clones, even if R8, even if Fives is your only R8.
And
so there are instances like that where one character really has like an outsized role. Or where a character is just like really where the benefits really help based on particular usage.
You really hit the nail on the head there in terms of the next thing I was going to kind of mention, that things that will tip the scale on where to apply those are R8, which especially capital ships, because you're going to get 2 speed, which you won't get in really any other way, and having, you know, in a mirror match or anything like that, you know, if you could have, you know, go head to head on the same speed, or you know have that advantage of 2 extra speed on, you know, a ship that, you know, there's no other way to change the speed on those things, can be just a huge benefit. So I think ships really can come to it. And then, you know, one of the things that I was really missing, I thought, on a lot of cases with the R8 lists was, which only Gridden really was one of the only people, when I was looking at the videos of people covering the best tunes to R8, was really saying tunes that stat share should 100% like be considered, you know, at the top of the list, because, you know, they're not just benefiting themselves, they're really benefiting, you know, a big group. And so, you know, when you're looking at Chupio, you're looking at like Fives, you know, maybe R2 to a lesser extent, but like Quill, Mon Mothma, you know, I think deserve at least the consideration because of the stat share boost that they will get from the R8, and you know, over, you know, something that might be like, you know, a Vader or like a Gas, which seems obvious. And, you know, a lot of times, which was kind of pointed out, that the initial analysis of the tunes that were deserving of R8 were your attackers, because the boost to their offense was essentially giving you the biggest stat benefit for a single match. You know, when you can get that kill faster, do the damage better, bigger, that was such a bigger benefit compared to something like it's a tank, you know, which it's really like too expensive to use those resources on something like a tank, because you're not getting enough competitive advantage for the resources you're putting in. And that said, I mean, there are some other obvious ones, you know, like Fives, you said, or, you know, Malik, who is getting a usage, or who is, you know, doing solos, where again, maybe you're getting a more consistent solo.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I mean, I think on that front, it really is case by case, because like it's easy to, you're certainly right that there's a huge bonus for most attackers in terms of increasing like physical or special damage. But it's also true with some of the tanks, including the ones we've talked about, like those armor gains it's easy to underrate those. And so, you know, I think CG has generally done a pretty good job, you know, with some exceptions, but generally has done a good job of like identifying the increasing mastery stats that are sort of complementary to what's in a character's kit.
Yeah.
And so, I think the changes are very obvious for attackers for sure, because there's just like the damage boosts are just so apparent. But I wouldn't totally sleep on the tanks though, because the stacking armor and health and protection like does make a difference. And that's especially true again if there are other like staturing arrangements within a team, or if they're being used along with GLs, and so you're having like stacking mastery on top of that.
Good point.
It can make a difference. And I mean, for the way I think about it is like in a lot of cases, you know, there are characters where you in normal circumstances are either like, let's say, building for speed or building for damage, or like you want a character to be tanky, or you want it to have like a high damage output. And in a lot of instances, like what R8 allows you to do is a hybrid of the two. Mm-hmm. Is like you get these hybrid builds, and like B1 is an example of this, where like a lot of people either have like a ton of offense on B1 but it's a bit slower, or you put a faster build on it and then you sacrifice damage. But like what an R8 on B1, for example, gives you is basically the physical damage of an offense build, but then you can still mod for speed. Or like, you know, I'm not sure if I am happy or regret doing this one, but like Bastlashan Fallen is another instance where like I can put speed on her, but have the health as if I did a tanky health build, but then still give her like a crit avoidance arrow.
Okay.
But still have her like, you know, over like 310 speed and like 100,000 health and a crit avoidance arrow, which is like sort of typically you're choosing between those things. And so like in a lot of instances, for me at least, what the R7 to R8 jump gives you is eliminating the binary between like the advantages of one mod build and the advantages of another, because it gives you both.
Yeah, that's actually so insightful to consider that, you know, if you can utilize the bump in R8 in one direction, it allows you to push another direction that the two might, you know, because I think so often, yeah, we just say like R8 is just going to extend in the same direction that we want to go. And now you're saying, well, hold on, maybe we can do a more well-rounded tune, you know, by utilizing the bump we get from R8 and push the other direction that makes the tune, you know, more special than just pushing for the single stat. Yeah, that's amazing. And then, yeah, I guess just also in that regard, it's kind of, we mentioned how bounty hunters were, you know, so great. And then you've got Bossk sitting there again, which is like a great tank and a great ship, you know, which, I mean, Bossk is never going to outgrow his use, you know, as a ship in, you know, in the game at some, anywhere. So
I have not done Bossk, but I've eyed it carefully. But I do think that's an attractive one for sure.
Yeah.
Especially with, I mean, I think we're getting tons of hints from CG that the executor is gonna, that the bounty hunter ships will potentially be useful. I mean, they haven't done any kit reveals or anything, but just based on the requirements, it seems like, and like canonically, the way that like the executor appear in the films with the bounty hunters, like in episode 5, it would make sense for there to be some match there.
Yeah.
And so if that's true, that pushes like Houndstooth, for example, more into the fleet mega. And I would expect you would see more R8s there, but
for sure.
I haven't done it personally yet, but I've got my eye on it.
Yeah, that's amazing. Out of your 28, you haven't done Bossk, but I guess that'll be an up and coming one should that ship.
I've gotten some random ones. Like part of what is like the fun and the challenge of sort of being in our guild's position is like we are pilot testing a lot of this stuff, and like at sort of the tip of the spear of the game, like we're doing a lot of the trial and error, and then like based on whether it works or doesn't work for us and some of our peer guilds, it filters down a bit. You know, like we, for example, like we did at the beginning, we really pushed like GK and JKA as I think the first two R8s we did, and that gave us in the short term a really big PvP advantage from the boost to the negotiator fleet. And like now that's like a super common thing. I think if we had done that and it didn't work, then you know the like R8 meta would have been very different, and that just would have been like a mistake in hindsight that we made.
Yeah, and you're stuck with
it. So again, I think that goes back to like sort of, you know, meta shifts are like made rather than just happen, but we have to do the trial and error.
Yeah, to find out. Yeah, which is kind of interesting. Yeah, as we'll see. Like, that's why I'm so interested to see where Bad Batch land, and, you know, what resources they'll require in terms. And then, of course, because you have like MK with the Bad Patch, which just seems so insurmountable. The times I see people trying to like beat that in GA a lot, it's just like, God, the counter that, you know, the things you have to put together to counter that MK with Bad Batch is just seems way out there. So yeah, all of that. It's just, yeah, totally fascinating. Yeah, just thank you for sharing all of your experience and perspective on a lot of that. And especially just to hear like what you don't have R8, you know, it's, I mean, I guess almost we should have gone over all 28, 29 of your R8s just to kind of, I guess it'd be kind of fascinating.
I'm happy to give you a rapid fire. I'm looking at the list right now.
All right, let's do it. If you got time, yeah, just for fun, yeah.
All right, let me give you a rapid fire.
Okay.
JMK, Ray, C, JML, SLKR, Gas, Vader, CLS, Cat, Piet, Grievous, JKL, Chewbacca, Fives, Bam, BSF, Boba Fett, Cam, GMY, GK, B1, Han, Ahsoka, Dark Trooper, JKA, Red Trooper. That might be Sith Marauder is the last one.
Oh, a little bit of Marauder action in there. Well, it sounds like, yeah, a lot of that would help you
have
a
really list.
Good DR team and a good Rebel team because you had Han and Chewie in there as well. Yeah, so they're probably just lay waste. Like, I don't know that I would want to face, you know, Rebels with like those two tunes are aided. Nice. That was actually
a lot of fun. Yeah, Han is one where, like, obviously the damage boost is huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a fun team.
Yeah, and you still run a fast Han? I know that was like the meta GA.
Let's see. Han Solo.
You run like a speed set on him at all?
Or? It is not. No, it's not a speed set.
Okay, but probably just fast because you have the mods to make up.
He is. It's a crit damage, crit chance,
of
offset, crit damage triangle, offense cross, speed arrow. He is 296.
Okay. Oh.
With over 9,000 physical on a crit damage set.
There it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, it's a hybrid where, you know, I think a lot of players are in the position of like spending a lot of time farming crit damage mods, especially like over the past few years.
Yeah.
And the way relics have changed things, I think, has really tilted the balance in favor of offense modding.
Yep.
So like I, like a lot of others, have some like really fast crit damage sets.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't, you know, there's just not as many places to put them anymore. But yeah. Han is one of them because his like crit chance is so high and his other, he gives, you know, the crit chance up from his bonuses and all that. So like that's a good place to put that set.
Absolutely. Anytime I farm mod challenges now, it's on offense sets trying to make up.
Yeah, I really like, I've been doing speed for like the last 2 months because I really think there's like a sort of returning speed meta.
Yeah.
But I mean, speed and offense, I think, are definitely the most important ones. And then I try to sprinkle in like the offsets, like some tenacity, some potency, some crit chance, some health sometimes, although you get a lot of health from other events in the game. But I try and mix it up for sure. Yeah.
Great. Well, so we're going to transition, wrap things up here a little bit. And I think we'd be remiss if we didn't discuss a little bit of R9, you know, coming before we get out of here. And, you know, I guess the place to start would be, you know, what do you have any thoughts as to what we're going to see for like stat increases? I mean, I can't imagine we're going to return like to a speed increase or something on relics, which we've never seen.
No, I would be really shocked if that happened. You know, as to how much of a mastery boost it's going to be, I have no idea. I don't really have like any sort of
thoughts,
educated guess about that.
It's just going to be again like
I imagine it'll just continue to be another step up in the same abilities. Like I don't think they would be introducing like different
something new
stat okay. changes than what relics 1 through 8 provide. I could be wrong about that. I just don't know.
Well, and at some point you wonder if they completely scrapped relic abilities or if, you know, at some point we're going to build up to a level of that. I mean, because I just think too with like the R8.
Oh yeah, they did talk about that at some point.
Yeah, and we don't know. I think they may have completely scrapped that idea. Regardless of whether they brought that up in a road ahead like a long time ago, but I think with the R9, it just makes me wonder, yeah, what's the incentive going to be to really go R9? I mean, I think the incentive for R8 has really been negligible. You know, I mean, as a person who owns zero R8s, I don't see R8 really affecting at my level, you know, my ability to climb in arena, my ability to win in GA, you know, any of that stuff. So, I mean, it's just like, yeah, I don't have any point or motivation to R8 people beyond, you know, the game setting or requirement so that I can continue to like procure end game tunes, you know, to because it's the tunes, you know, that essentially keep right. competitive more than the R8 and stuff. And so I just wonder if R9 is going to still be in that same light, or, you know, if at some point, you know, like, because again, they're going to have to up the ante on the requirements and the salvage needed to like R9 if they're going to have to put something in there to take it over the top in terms of desirability.
Yeah, I think what I'm more curious about is this issue is like how what the release cadence is going to be and what they're going to be a reward for, what it's going to be tied to.
Yeah.
I think in hindsight,
tied to, I didn't even think about that because
what you're going to have to Wrangler, do to earn
so
that.
Yeah, oh, that yeah,
could tie like, is that gonna, is it going to be like a challenge tank raid? Is it going to be some kind of like, do they add them to territory war rewards or something like that?
Right, well, because they did announce no more challenge raids. They just dojo.
Oh, okay, all right. Yeah, I mean, it's got to be tied to some. Maybe they'll give it away for GAC. I mean, who knows?
But that makes me wonder, what could they possibly tie it to? Yeah,
right. And so, I think in hindsight, the release structure and cadence for the R8s has actually been pretty good.
Yeah.
In terms of gating the pace of acquiring materials and tying into the raid, like there was a lot of growing pain at first, and people like getting accustomed to the raid and working out all that. But I think it's managed the release and growth of those relics pretty well. And so I hope that whatever R9 is and whenever it comes, it's managed in a similarly effective manner. And I also think, I mean, you know, not to go off on a tangent, but I also think they've done a pretty good job at managing the 6-dot slicing materials through galactic challenges in a similar way. Like it's something, you know, it gives you a reason to do the GC that beyond just doing content for its own sake. And you get some every couple of days, but it's not like freely available, but you're also not like hurting for it all the time either.
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't know. I think, you know, CG, there's a lot to criticize, but I think on the release cadences for these, some of these scarce materials, I think they've done a pretty good job of that. And so hopefully the R9 is the same way.
Yeah, I think it's going to be shocking at first, especially, you know, once you see the requirements, you just know it's going to be heavy at first. And I think, you know, I think it was really funny even in Crumb's comment about no more challenge raids coming. He's like, yeah, we kind of missed the mark on the challenge raid and it didn't really hit where we wanted it to hit. And so we don't have any more planned. And it's like, well, you know, I'm not surprised, but two, like you guys just didn't have the foresight to realize like we can't in a mobile game make a requirement that you see in like a WoW or whatever those style of games are, you know, requiring everyone to go in at once was like not a feasible barrier for the raid. And so like whatever, like you can, I want them to think of barriers. There needs to be barriers for these raids, but coordinating people's schedules on a mobile game should not be a barrier. And
yeah, I will say, I mean, having been in the unenviable position of trying to administer and oversee some of those raids in the back when there were timed drops, it was a total nightmare.
Total nightmare.
I'm glad they moved away from that.
Yeah. And then, you know, I think, you know, in a bit of hindsight, the fact that, I mean, I guess we would have it somewhat easy in terms of being able to more manage the raid once we did actually overcome that time management, or, you know, when you were only having to rely on 9 people, you know, being able to complete it. But, you know, especially the hindsight now of the change that they made has made that raid so much more accessible to more players and things, especially at our end game level. And that makes especially the acquirement of the R9 materials, or the gating of the R8, sorry, you know, through that vehicle has been, you know, so much more manageable, just like you're saying. Like it's not something that we look down upon, you know, in retrospect now. It's actually turned out to be a perfectly reasonable, you know, gate, and the fact that it was tied to that. So with that, Partick, thank you so much for joining me today. Really great. I loved all of your perspective, and really enjoyed chatting with you. I hope to have you on again sometime. We'll see if we can, you know, work our schedules out. And especially just, it's such a blessing to be able to pull from your expertise on your whale side of the game. So yeah, I just wanted to give you a moment to, if you had any other things you wanted to add.
Yeah, no, I mean, I thank you so much for having me, and thank you for the patience required to wait and schedule this. You know, it's always good. Obviously, like, we all invest way too much time and other resources in this activity, but I think we do that largely, you know, not because of the game itself, but because of the community around it. And like, that's certainly true for me. I think it's true for many people. And, you know, projects like this to create other areas for people to share experiences and bond over this hobby are really important to sort of sustain the lifespan and longevity of the game. So I'm always like very encouraged and happy to see more content and more effort to have discussions and sort of bring people together over this like shared time and money pit that we cannot crawl out of. So I'm really, you know, thank you for doing what you do and for putting on the show, and I'm always happy to be a part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's so funny because I actually called last episode. I said, my next episode is going to be an R8 episode. I know that they're going to announce R9 and it's going to make this episode obsolete by the time like I get around to finally recording it. And sure enough, they did. But yeah, absolutely. When we get around to our R9 episode, we'll make sure we get you back on as well. And yeah, we'll go through your list of R9s and everything. And, you know, just real quick before I sign off, I just want to thank the listeners for taking the time to listen and making it here to the end of the episode. Please join us on our Discord, join the conversation and all the fun that we have over there. And with that, it is time to
go switch off.